Got it. Good afternoon, everybody, and welcome to the Policy Board meeting for the Capital Region Council of Governments. It's Wednesday, February 28th, 2024. It's 12:03 p.m., and I would like to call to order this regular meeting. I'm opening up the floor for public comment. Is anyone here for public comment today? Asking once. Anyone here for public comment? Asking twice and a third time. Seeing and hearing none, I'll close the public comment section of our meeting. At the moment, we are waiting for one more person to join us for a quorum today, but we are going to move around our agenda a little bit because we have a very special guest with us today. Congressman Joe Courtney is here to give us a few moments of his time and give us an update on all things in Connecticut's 2nd District. Congressman Courtney, I will turn it over to you.
Great. Well, thank you, Mayor, and really appreciate the invitation to spend a few minutes with your cog. In the last week and a half, as I'm sure most of you know from the news, the House has been in recess or back home, and had a chance to visit some of your colleagues at RiverCog and yesterday at NECOG, and it's a pleasure to join folks at CROG. I was counting up the number of towns; it's about a dozen. From the 2nd District that are part of your catchment area there. I live in Vernon, so I'm actually live in CROG territory. And one thing I do want to really thank the your group and all of your sister and brother organizations was the initiative with the Census Bureau to recognize federal equivalents to counties based on COGS, which has made its way at least as far as census is concerned, as now, recognized federal policy. And I think that is just one of the smartest things, in terms of, state and federal relations for Connecticut that, really could have been done, because I truly believe that, since the system in Washington is so based on county government, which Connecticut got rid of in the 1950s, that I really do believe that it's hindered the ability of not just municipalities, but also other eligible entities that kind of really couldn't navigate eligibility with a lot of the departments. That's particularly true in terms of rural healthcare in Eastern Connecticut, which is definitely one of the hardest areas in healthcare right now. And a lot of federal programs at the Department of Health and Human Services that can give sort of extra reimbursement for Medicare for rural-based facilities like hospitals, clinics, et cetera, has been denied because we're neither fish nor fowl. So anyway, I just want to really congratulate CROG for joining this effort. And again, it's pretty, the ink is barely dry in terms of the approval. But I know certainly my staff is really going to be following up with a lot of departments to make sure that they realize Connecticut is different. We don't have counties. And we want to point to the fact that the law now provides a pathway through COGS to get more help for our area. Obviously the question of the day right now in Washington is just really these never-ending cliffs that we keep sort of running into. And we've got one fast approaching on Friday, where four agencies of the federal government are going to shut down unless either we do another continuing resolution or we get full agreement on a overall fiscal year 24 appropriations package. We're about 5 months into the fiscal year, which is really late. I mean, Matt was in town the other day and we were talking about this, and it's really disruptive. I mean, in every department, including Health and Human Services, and including the Department of Defense, you name it. So there's a lot of good work that's being done. That's the good news. We agreed on the spending caps last May for the overall budget, which Speaker McCarthy got a lot of pressure afterwards not to go along with that. But now Speaker Johnson is in a place where he's now agreed to the caps. And according to what we're hearing from the appropriators is that there's been a lot of progress made in terms of funding each one of the 11 or 12 spending bills. By agency and by, line item. So, that's really the guts of an appropriation spending bill. The holdup right now is just that there's a lot of policy writers, authorities that are being insisted on in the House majority end of the table. And, I will say this, Speaker Johnson had the same problem at the end of last year when we did the National Defense Authorization Act, and he stripped that bill of all of these riders. We call them poison pills, but nonetheless, that allowed the bill to pass. I mean, we got over 300 votes to do NDAA. That made sure that, all the sailors down at the Navy base, the submarine base in Groton, got their pay raise of 5.2%. That's true of Guard and reservists as well in Connecticut. And, I would just sort of throw that out there because, hopefully he'll recognize the success of NDAA, which was a center-left, center-right coalition of members that passed the bill and got it to Biden's desk, is that, that's really the roadmap to hopefully getting these spending bills done. So we're going to learn more actually later tonight and tomorrow in terms of just how the progress is going. Again, there was a meeting at the White House yesterday of the four corners of the caucuses with the president, and there was an agreement that shutdowns are bad, we should not do a shutdown, and that we're gonna figure out some pathway. And as I said, the real solution though is just to get the rest of this fiscal year done. There's a lot of community projects out there that I know municipalities that are part of CROG that are waiting to find out whether or not they're getting funded. I have a number of them, which definitely our CROG towns, like Suffield, Enfield, Coventry, that really have these really good, solid projects that, made its way through the appropriations committee process. And Stafford also has one. And, that is all hanging in the balance in terms of just, again, whether we complete the fiscal year 24 budgets. The minute we have any clarity on that, obviously we're going to share that with the communities that made their way through the process, and then we're going to immediately pivot to fiscal year 2025 because the window is going to reopen for municipalities to apply for next year's federal budget community projects. I believe Senator Blumenthal and Murphy have already sent out notice for people to, start submitting requests. The House Appropriations Committee has advised us not to do that yet because we had more rules that restricted the scope of community projects in the House bill last year. So, but that should be, very soon. And, I think that's been a really healthy thing for Congress to restart the community projects. We called them earmarks in the old days. That helped get CROG the $2 million for crumbling foundations, which Pauline, joined us out for a really great press conference with CIFSIC. And that money is being used to fill the gap for homeowners who qualified for their foundation repairs, but not all the other driveway repairs, doorsteps, landscaping, all that stuff that unfortunately, when you replace the foundation, kind of created costs for people. And again, I can't say enough good things about how CROG, really, was a great ally and partner in terms of putting that together. CIFSIC just celebrated their fifth anniversary last night. I guess there was a little celebration in Glastonbury there. And Mike Magalaris is convinced that, this CROG community project is really going to help accelerate uptake in terms of the remaining funds that they have through the bond. So that was really just a really great collaboration that's there. The the last thing I would just sort of end with is Aaron said we can talk about the great second congressional district. About a week and a half ago, we had the annual State of the Union for Electric Boat Shipyard. Some of you may have seen the press on it. They hired 5,300 people last year, calendar year 2023. That's the largest number in the history, the 125-year history of the shipyard. I mean, that surpasses even World War II in terms of the hiring that went on down there. And for 2024, They're looking at hiring another 5,000. Again, some of that is in Rhode Island, but two-thirds of it is in Connecticut. And looking at the job market and looking at the, just the availability of people to fill that huge target. And that, by the way, is going to continue in out years. This is not just a two-year thing. There's no question that, EB is going to be looking to the Hartford, CROG area in terms of teaming up with the Workforce Board, Capital Region Workforce Board, which is very much now working with the Eastern Connecticut Workforce Board in terms of the pre-apprenticeship job training for electricians, welders, outside machinists. Again, Electric Boat has made it crystal clear that they realize they have to move west in terms of, filling this incredible workforce demand that is going to continue for quite a while. Based on the Navy shipbuilding plans, the new alliance that we just struck with Australia, that's going to involve helping them with their submarine fleet as well. And it's very exciting. We're seeing, the trade schools are now, totally connected to this. We're now starting to see comprehensive high schools. The non-career and technical high schools are now starting up their own career pathway programs to take advantage of these opportunities. These are not just jobs, they're careers. And, if anybody has questions about any of that, our office, has been really working on this for years now, and, particularly on the workforce development side. So, as I said, this is going to be a statewide effort if we're going to succeed in terms of, filling this huge workforce demand. There's also a ripple effect for small companies and supply chain companies that are feeding into production that's there. The estimate for Connecticut was about $2 billion of work that's going to be now, flowing outside of the shipyard to other small businesses. And it's not just, metal fabrication or machine work. It's also other types of services that small businesses and companies can take advantage of. So as I said, we're more than happy to share that sort of intel, with municipalities or school districts, if people have questions for it, because as I said, it's really, I think, going to be, an engine of growth in the state of Connecticut for many, many years to come. So I'll stop there, Mayor. And if you have a question or two, happy to take it. I know you have other items on the agenda, but again, we love working with your team at CROG and directly with the municipalities that are members. I think together we can do really good things.
Congressman, thank you so much. I'll open up the floor for questions from members. If anybody has anything, I'm looking for some hands. Anybody? Everybody thinks you're perfect. Nope, Lisa Thomas from Coventry. Go ahead,
well,
Lisa.
Well, it's not because I don't think my congressman is perfect, because obviously he is.
Yeah.
But I do have a question. First of all, thank you for all that information. It's very exciting. What we're finding in Coventry is some things are getting backed up. So as you know, we have the grant that we got for the sewer line, the sewer extension. But we've been stuck because there's such a backlog at EPA to review the grant information. Do you predict any movement on that? What we keep being told, when your office contacts us to find out how we're doing, we get told by EPA that they don't have enough staff still, and they're still reviewing 2022 grants.
So
any words of wisdom there?
I mean, if you look at, what EPA's portfolio is right now, with the infrastructure bill in terms of brownfield funding, again, they're the funnel that is distributing brownfield funds. And we've got one of those projects in Rockville, the old Daniels Mill, where they qualified for this a while ago, and they're patiently waiting for their funding. And and then if you look at the climate portion of the Inflation Reduction Act, EPA also has, their portfolio has just like, changed tremendously in the last two years because of the infrastructure bill, Inflation Reduction Act, and the community project. So we have a great relationship with the EPA regional office, and they take our calls. But I, in fairness to them, honestly, I think it's still going to be a little bit of a wait.
Okay, so that's not going to impact our receipt. We still have the commitment of those dollars to the project, and
Yes.
that's not
All
going to
right.
cause us
Yeah.
a problem.
Megan O'Sullivan is with
She's been
me,
in touch.
Ravinsky, and she just nodded her head and said, "Yeah, you're not going to lose the money."
Great, thank you. We appreciate having it.
Yeah.
Thanks, Lisa. Anyone else? I don't see anything, Congressman.
All right.
Oh, wait, hold on. I lied. Aaron McBride.
Hi. I just want to clarify regarding congressional directed spending, the appropriations process. We aren't accepting applications yet. We just held the two webinars using the fiscal year 2024 guidelines to help people better understand them and kind of ask about any questions regarding the programming. But we're anticipating hopefully sometime in March, early March, with the fiscal year 25 guidelines coming out. And I'll make sure that everyone's aware when they do open up. But I know we've been getting some emails that people do think it is open for applications yet, but it's not. So I just wanted to clarify that. And if anyone has questions, feel free to email me.
Well, thank you for clarifying that, Aaron. I guess I had heard. I know. I guess the webinars. I thought maybe it had gone a little bit further. So, and by the way, with people listening, we really try to coordinate with the Senate offices to maximize, the community projects that we can get to the state. We don't want to waste, precious community project requests, which are definitely limited in the House. Again, but I think, I would encourage people to submit their requests to Senate and House, and then we can hopefully sort it all out.
Mayor, it looks like we've got a question from Chris Edge, and then I've got a comment or two I'd like to make as well before we let the congressman go.
Go ahead, Chris.
Thank you very much. Congressman, thank you for taking the time today. I just had a quick question for you, kind of a what's the best way to go? I've been working with my compatriot in Britain, and we see a huge need in the marketplace for diesel techs. I think there's a large need for it, and would love to see if there's potentially federal resources to help us potentially create a training facility, because everything we own is arrived by truck. I don't think that's going to change. It may change to electric, but diesel's still going to be important. So I don't know if it makes sense to continue through somebody in your office or the best way to go if we were to look to do something like this. Again, not a small project, but potentially could be life-changing for a lot of people because the average salary for a diesel tech is over $100,000 a year. I'll just kind of throw it out to you and get any thoughts you have. Thank you.
So again, the U.S. Department of Labor funds that come in for job training, come through those workforce boards. So the Capital Region Workforce Board, is definitely connected to that federal flow of funds, and we'll certainly, I would be happy to work with you and Congressman Larson's office, and I guess Congresswoman Hayes has New Britain as well. But your point is completely well taken, and we're seeing the same thing, east of the river. It's just, the demand for metal trades, for mechanical talent is just off the charts right now. And personally, I think it really is important for our even elementary school, but secondary schools also to get in the game here. And the U.S. Department of Education, with our fellow Connecticut citizen, Miguel Cardona, who's a graduate of trade school, he went to Wilcox Tech, has now started a program at the Department of Education. It's called Career Connected High Schools, which is really, trying to create through a competitive funding model to stimulate comprehensive high schools to set up career pathways for whether it's, manufacturing, healthcare, technology, so they've already had the first round of grants. Westbrook High School down on the shoreline actually is in the final group competing for it. I think there was two others in the state of Connecticut. But the good thing about that is, even though other schools didn't win the process, it stimulated them to start changing their curriculum. You know, there's just no question that everybody's got to go to college. You know, sort of philosophy that dominated in high schools is, it's not fair to kids to not, give them the opportunity to at least, explore other ways to succeed in life. And the trade schools, which are great, but there's just, they're oversubscribed, and we've got to go where the people are. And Miguel is very, passionate and animated about, moving in that direction. And, sometime maybe I think it would be great to get him, in front of a bunch of people in Connecticut about the fact that he wants to use the Department of Education now as a tool to really stimulate, change for the better for our country. Right now in the U.S., 15% of our workforce is in manufacturing. At the end of the Cold War, it was 36%. And I know that because, as we're dealing with this issue at the shipyard, I mean, that's sort of it shows the stark challenge about trying to, we've got to close this skills gap to, if we're going to really, be able to deliver what the Navy wants, but also what our economy needs, like diesel mechanics. So happy to, continue this dialogue, with you and as I said, it's going to be a team effort, in terms of the federal government, the state Department of Education and labor, and also municipal government.
Thanks, Congressman. Looks like I have a question from Brian Foley.
Thanks, Congressman. As a member of the Irish American Home in your district in Glastonbury, I would like to invite you to our 2024 Greater Hartford St. Patrick's Day Parade. And you may have heard we have an Irish person of the year that's hosting the call right now, and she'll be leading the parade for us. And I'd love for you to march in our contingent, our political contingent with the
governor. Is that one this year? What day is it, Brian?
March 9th, and you'll get an email from me. I'll hit everybody.
I may not be able to make it. I'm sorry, but I will. I've been before, and it's a great parade, and you've got a great marshal. So, I'll try my best.
We'll drink your beer for you if you don't show up.
Good to see you.
All right.
Brian and I will take care of all the drinking of the Guinness for you, Congressman. It's fine.
Counting on you.
Thanks, Brian. Any other questions?
Mayor, yeah. This is Matt. But before we wrap up, I just want to thank the Congressman for his support, on crumbling foundations and so many other matters that we talked about today. He and his office, they're just so responsive, and they're a great resource for our region. Really enjoyed my time meeting with him and Megan from his team a week or so ago, and want to thank him for his work on behalf of the district and the state overall.
Brian, you're the good guys. Got to help you guys. All right. Take care.
Thank you.
Thank you. Yeah,
bye-bye.
All right. We do have a quorum now, so I'm going to move right back into our approval of the minutes. Do I have a motion and a second?
No move, Madam Chair.
Moved by Mr. Coleman. A second?
Second.
Oh, can someone else identify?
Second, Lori Spielman.
Thanks, Lori. Any questions, comments? Seeing and hearing none, all those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Minutes carry. We're going to move into our action items. So we'll go into item number 7, a resolution authorizing submittal of the Deep Rec Trails grant to provide a match from our CROG Regional Fund. Do I have a motion and a second?
One move, Madam Chair.
Second.
Lisa Thomas Coventry.
John and Lisa, thank you guys very much. And Pauline, I will turn it to you to give a brief explanation before we vote.
So this is I have to give acknowledgement to Jonathan Louise from Glastonbury, as it is his brainchild. DEEP is requesting grant applications for recreational trail grants. We have a coalition of CROG towns who are interested in purchasing maintenance equipment that towns would normally not purchase themselves because they're too expensive to do so or to maintain for usage for 2 to 3 weeks a year. But with the combined towns, we hope to leverage that and be able to share that equipment. And we're requesting up to $100,000 to be used as match from the CROG Regional Fund, and the towns would supply the rest of the match required.
Thanks, Pauline. Any questions for her? All right. All those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
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 Anybody opposed? Motion carries. Item number 8, resolution authorizing agreement with Nacho. This is Cheryl, but you have a motion and a second.
So moved, Madam Chair.
Second, Lori Spielman.
John, Lori, thank you. Cheryl, this is you.
Thanks, Mayor. I don't know. We usually pronounce it Nacho, but
I call it Nacho because I like food. Why not?
So this resolution simply authorizes a resolution with them for Matt to enter into an agreement with the National Association of City and County Health Officials. And it's for a $10,000 grant that we apply for and typically receive every year. And it's essentially to support the operational readiness of our Capital Region Medical Reserve Corps. So.
Thank you, Cheryl. Mm-hmm. I'm not going to stop calling it Nacho. Just questions, comments on this? All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Anybody opposed? Motion carries. Item number 9 today, resolution endorsing priority climate action plan for the Hartford, East Hartford, Middletown MSA. Do I have a motion and a second?
So moved, Madam Chair.
Moved by Mr. Coleman. Second.
Second, Lisa Thomas Coventry.
Thank you, Lisa. Kyle?
Thanks, Mayor. Afternoon, everyone. So I'm going to try and get through this as quickly as possible. It is a lot, so I'll just do my best to get going and we'll jump right to it. So the Priority Climate Action Plan is a program under the Climate Pollution Reduction Grant Program through EPA. So I'm going to hit you a couple acronyms here. So we'll start with the CPRG, Climate Pollution Reduction Grant, newly created under the Inflation Reduction Act, administered through the EPA. Broadly, it's intended to get various levels of government working together to reduce emissions and decarbonize and trying to scale up these efforts across the board over multiple sectors of government. So in our state, there are 3 regional plans, Bridgeport, New Haven, and Hartford MSA. So it's for our region, it's CROG and the River Cog communities working together. So that blue area on your map you see is our plan. So partnering with River Cog and CROG. So within CPRG, there are 2 phases. The first one we're talking about today is acronym number 2, PCAP, Priority Climate Action Plan. So that's what you're being asked to endorse today. And we won't cover the deliverables 2 and 3. That's a later phase. We won't go into that. And the second phase is implementation, which is directly related to the PCAP. And there's $4.6 billion in implementation funding available for projects that are identified within that PCAP. Just to give you a sense of the timeline we've all been working under. So it's a brand new program. So it took EPA months to kind of stand it up, approve our work plan. No one in the country really even got money until August. So once we get the funds in August, we did an RFP process and selection, consultant selection through this fall. Really the work didn't begin until like November through January. So it was an extremely compressed, aggressive timeline. And we're all aiming towards that March 1st submittal date to EPA. In terms of what needs to be in that PCAP, that Priority Climate Action Plan, I'll just draw your attention to that top line, near-term implementation-ready projects. So that table, the bolded lines are kind of the required elements. We have to do an inventory, show where the emissions are coming from in our region. That one around the box, quantified reduction measures. If we identify the measures, we have to kind of quantify by how much they'll reduce emissions. The LIDAC, low-income disadvantaged communities benefit analysis, I'll explain in a second. and review of authority to implement. Can you actually do the measures that you're proposing to do in a plan? So first task was the inventory. UMass Amherst did our inventory for our region. So you can see the three major sectors that are contributing to emissions in our region are transportation, buildings, and electricity. When you see that dotted dashed red line, that means forestry. That means it's reducing carbon. So the forestry sector is reducing carbon in our region. So LIDAC, I think this is acronym number three, low income and disadvantaged communities. That's an EPA term. They're looking at socioeconomic data and environmental justice categories. And there's a mapping tool they use. It's required as part of this program. So using that tool, we identified 8 LIDAC communities in our region that we have to address in the plan. So within the plan, broadly, we're trying to identify what measures should be included and how we should include them. So we're looking at a couple, kind of a informal checklist, if you will. Is it actually going to reduce greenhouse gas emissions? Is it in the purview of a local government? Do you have the existing authority to do it, or a council of government, or some third arrangement with a partnership with a third party? Does it have obvious or demonstrable benefits to low-income communities? This next one is very important. Do municipal leaders and staff support it? Do you want to do this work? Is it something you've vetted and are in support of? And then lastly, is it implementation ready? Is it something you could do within the next year or two or three? What we've been saying, if it doesn't hit all those criteria, it's okay. The PCAP is only the beginnings. If it's something that requires a little more vetting, a little more data analysis, it's got to be in a comprehensive plan. We'll have more than a year to do that work, and it's more detail required, but we'll shift it to the CCAP phase. In terms of measures and how they were collected, I'll just briefly go through them. So we did have a technical advisory committee. So staff from the municipalities on the left there were part of our committee, and they're helping vet some of the proposals or in the measures that were in the plan. And the groups that are are right there, whether they're state agencies or nonprofits, they also helped us kind of vet the content of the PCAP. We had a pretty compressed and accelerated meeting schedule because of the schedule here. So we had about 9 meetings between November and January with various stakeholders. We had a big CCM kickoff webinar in November, in-person meetings at various towns. And we also had an intergov meeting in mid-January. We also had a municipal survey that was open to all 60 towns that was open for a little over a month and is available online. We also hired an equity coach through Sustainable Connecticut, specifically for those LIDAC communities. So she was in touch with your staff for those communities. And I think most of your staff put her in touch with local residents to get their input for the plan. And then this is in the plan. This is the appendix of the plan, excuse me. So this has more detail, but for each measure that's in the plan, there's a summary. They're going to show you metrics, how we can measure projects, projected emissions reductions, benefits of not only greenhouse gas emissions, but air quality, utility cost reductions, things like that, impacts to low-income communities, who were the implementers, do you have the authority to implement, in a proposed rough schedule. So that's all in the appendix of the plan if you want to go into the details. So in terms of the actual measures proposed in the plan itself, we have 12 broadly organized by sector. So electricity generation, transportation, agriculture and working lands, waste materials, and commercial buildings. And I'll briefly go through them now. So in terms of electricity generation, this is basically just reducing the amount of electricity we get from fossil fuels. So we're looking at implementation-ready projects. So municipalities could upgrade their properties. So town halls, schools, parking lots, et cetera. We also included affordable housing, solar and affordable housing. It's not subject to the same commercial cap as other incentive programs. So we thought that was a good target. And that's the recommendation of both of our consultant and our advisory committee suggested including that in the plan. Trying to advance. So transportation, there's 2 broad themes here. So this first slide is about electrification, really. So you're looking to convert the municipal fleets light duty to EVs and school buses as well. As an intermediate stage, just because of the growing pains in the EV sector, we're also including suggestions about hybrid And biodiesel is an intermediate step. So there is some transition and growing pains in that sector. And as well, that second one there to include EV charging stations throughout the towns. This second one is really about building off stuff that CROG's already doing. So we have a transit priority corridor study and has recommendations on operational and capital improvements in the six major transit corridors in our region. We also have a roundabout study that identifies about the top 100 roundabouts, potential roundabout locations in the region. Among their many benefits is reduced idling and therefore emissions. So we thought that was appropriate to include in the plan. And complete streets, which many of you are doing at the local level, improving our infrastructure to make walking and biking easier. Next one. This one's simple. Agriculture working lands, the easy implementation ready one is plant more trees. They sequester carbon and they help with a heat island effect. Implementation ready. The next one is something we're already trying to work on across the state is the waste crisis. So we're trying to reduce the amount of food we send to landfills and therefore emit methane, and also reduce the tonnage that we're shipping to Ohio and Pennsylvania. So can we increase food waste diversion and increase anaerobic digestion in the region? And lastly, energy audits. So can we scale up these energy audit programs that are kind of already oversubscribed and help kind of upgrade our building stock? Same thing for municipal buildings. Can we upgrade our town halls and facilities to more energy efficient standards? So those are the measures, and the details are throughout the plan. They have been vetted by staff and our consultants and our advisory committee. And so just a word on the implementation application. We are planning at this point to do a multi-COG coalition, partnering with the Connecticut Green Bank to apply for solar on affordable housing properties. So that could either be housing authorities or for municipalities that own affordable housing. We could target that. We'll work out the details, but the broad strokes, we look to use these funds to deploy solar and address barriers where they are. So it could be roof conditions or interconnection fees, in some cases directly purchasing solar panels. But we're working out the details with Green Bank now.
And we're going to bring this back next month, right?
Yeah, the implementation. Yeah. We'll have more details for you for the next couple of weeks. But for now, if you're interested, please reach out directly to me and I'll clear my schedule and we'll talk and we'll go over the details. But happy to talk with you if your community is interested. And so back to the schedule. So we owe our PCAP to EPA by this Friday, March 1st, and then we immediately pivot to the implementation grant preparation, which is due to EPA on April 1st. And that is my 10-minute summary of the Priority Climate Action Plan.
Mayor, just before we turn it back to you, I want to thank Kyle. This, as you can see, you know, this is a weighty agenda item, so we wanted to spend some time with it, and it's been a tremendous amount of work over a compressed period of time, and really want to thank Kyle and other members of our team and from COGS around the state that have been involved in this, and we're happy to take any questions and ultimately looking for your endorsement, and again, we'll be back next month with that implementation grant application.
Thank you, Mayor. I'd first like to say I endorse the overall plan as developed, and I'd like to make a suggestion. It may be 11th hour, but maybe this is maybe long lines of the implementation. Is energy? If we have energy efficiency for audits, I was wondering if it might be able to. There's been any discussion regarding energy efficient implementation funds to address some of our older housing stock. We all have older housing stock that is very dated in terms of energy efficiency measures. And I didn't know if that was part of the conversation or could be included as under that priority measure.
Yeah, Peter, I mentioned that to Green Bank yesterday and we're gonna look at it. I think we do have to hit the grant criteria in terms of low income communities. So maybe there'd be an income cutoff requirement, but I'll bring that up to Green Bank. So we're really trying to work within their existing programmatic structure, but I will mention that. And if we can incorporate that into the implementation application, we'll do our best.
Thanks, Kyle.
Yeah.
Thank you. Any other questions for Kyle?
All right, Kyle. Sorry, Mayor, this is why I should not be here.
We love having you here, Steve.
I just quickly wanted to thank Kyle and all the staff. I know a lot of work went into this, and it's really impressive, and I fully endorse it. So looking forward to seeing it carried out.
All right. All those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Anybody opposed? Motion carries. Thank you all. Going to move into our MPO items. John, I've got an action item for a TIP amendment for I-691 for a noise barrier in Southington, and I need a motion and a second.
Thank you, Madam Mayor. You're right, this is a replace a noise barrier on I-691 in Southington. The ConDOT's requesting they want to move it from FY24 to FY25, being funded with National Highway Funds. Transportation Committee reviewed and endorsed it on Monday, and so recommends to the MPO, and I would so move.
Do I have a second?
Second, Lori Spielman.
Thanks, Lori. Thought Mark might hop on in and second that, but that's all right. Any questions or comments? All those in favor, please say aye.
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 Any opposed? Seeing none, motion carries. Thank you. That concludes the action item portion of our agenda. And now we'll go into our staff reports. And Matt, I will turn it over to you.
Thank you very much, Mayor. And I'm going to move through these very, very quickly because I want to spend some time on our legislative update, which comes up next. So first of all, our Municipal Services Committee recently met last week. Want to thank Grace Taizzi, the Assistant Town Manager from Avon, for facilitating that meeting. One of the things we talked about is updating our grand list analysis of the impact that the crumbling foundations crisis has had on our region. So I will soon be reaching out to the 10 towns that have seen the most significant impacts so that we can schedule a meeting. I'm inviting the CEOs and the assessors so that we can update that analysis and hopefully, you know, utilize that to obtain the additional funding we will need to resolve the crisis once and for all. Next item is our office move. This is the last policy board meeting we will have here in this facility, and we're on track to move in 13 days. And we will look forward to welcoming you all at an open house in the spring. So really excited about that and appreciate the board's support. Moving on to the bipartisan infrastructure law. If you haven't seen it, round three of Safe Streets for All has recently been issued, and you can apply for both planning and demonstration grants or implementation grants. Please see our full report for those deadlines. Elizabeth Sanderson provides a very nice write-up in the full report. Also, really excited with the fact that we're submitting our application today for a RAISE grant for the Berlin Turnpike, which you authorized at your last meeting. Again, this application is focused on safety. How do we make the Turnpike more safe for all users of that problematic roadway? So it's been a tremendous, tremendous amount of work on the part of our staff, Elizabeth and Rob Alois and Kara Radzins and Caitlin Palmer and Ryan Faulkner and Eric Snowden and others, along with our colleagues at the DOT and from the three towns, Berlin, Newington, and Weathersfield. So we feel as though we've got a very strong application, and we're looking forward to a positive result. Next item, if you're curious, if you still have questions about your ability to utilize ARPA funds as a potential match for other federal funding sources, such as opportunities under the bipartisan infrastructure law, please take a look at this summary memorandum we prepared a few months back. A very, very useful resource for you all. Moving on. To municipal services. So our regional waste authority, I want to thank Fred Presley from Weathersfield for serving as our chair. We've got 14 members, as you may know, 13 of them from within CROG, continuing to meet, and the executive committee will hold its next meeting on March 18th. One of the things we are working on, or a couple of things we're working on, one is to streamline our ordinance and make it a little bit simpler. And then we're going to be going out and trying to recruit new members. So probably reaching out to the larger group, the larger CRA group in that regard. And then we're also working on a request for information so that we can look at organics diversion. What more can we do regionally to divert organic material from both our residential and commercial waste stream? Next item, the Human Services Coordinating Council will hold its next meeting on June 18th. And they're going to be talking about unaffordability and housing insecurity in our region. Would really ask all of you to make sure that you've got someone from your community that is attending the council and representing you. You know, it's a very good forum for these conversations. And then lastly, in the area of municipal services, if you haven't done so in a while, really would encourage you to take a look at our IT shared services cooperative purchasing programs. You know, we offer a variety of things related to online permitting, fiber optics, voice over internet protocol type services. So if you haven't taken a look at these in a while, would strongly encourage you to do so. Moving on to transportation planning, our very popular LOTSIP grant, the most recent round just closed on February 21st. We received 19 applications from 15 of our communities, and we'll look forward to vetting those. The Vision Zero Task Force that we have formed, which will be updating our regional transportation safety plan using that Safe Streets for All grant we received last year, we're going to hold our very first meeting next Friday on March 8th. I think that will be the last meeting that we hold here in this building. I want to thank Roger Cron from our team and others. We're looking forward to that meeting next week. We're going to have a really good group with representatives from the DOT, staff from across our region and other stakeholders, and looking forward to doing good work there. And then last slide under the staff report, in the area of public safety, we are going to be hosting a FEMA 402 class. This will be a condensed version of the NIMS system, National Incident Management System, for those of you who are familiar with it. And this really is targeted at senior officials. So this is a session for all of you. You know, if you're not familiar with ICS or NIMS, would strongly encourage you to attend this session that we're gonna hold on April 26th. And I wanna thank Cheryl Assis and Bill Perkins for setting this up. And again, hopefully many of you will be able to attend this session where we'll be able to provide you with a strong overview. And then lastly, in the area of regional planning and development, wanted to announce that we are recruiting an economic development coordinator who will help support the work of our economic development district and our comprehensive economic development strategy. So it's more of a program manager as opposed to an economic development coordinator you would see at the local level. And then we're also recruiting a transit planner and a transportation engineer for transportation planning. So if you know some good candidates for those three positions, please send them our way. And then last but not least, want to announce that our revolving loan fund committee did recently endorse an application for the Arrowhead Gateway project in Hartford. So that's our Brownfields program. And I think we're really starting to do good things, and we're seeing more applications come in. We're excited about that. That completes my report, Mayor. Happy to take any questions you or other members may have.
Thanks, Matt. Anyone have any questions for him? I don't see any. So we'll move on into our legislative update, and that's you and Mr. Harkin.
Yes. Thanks again, Mayor. And actually, we have Chris with us today instead of John.
Oh, I got excited for a little bit. I thought I would see my old mayor buddy, John.
Hey! I'm still good. Come on now, man. Yeah.
I know, Chris. I'm sorry.
we've got Mr. Smith with us instead, and Mr. Harkins is busy causing trouble up at the Capitol. But a couple things I would highlight before I turn it over to Chris. First of all, as Congressman Courtney said, I was recently able to to visit DC, had good visits with all of our congressional representatives, as well as the two senators. And the constant theme that I and my colleagues emphasized was infrastructure funding. First of all, we thank them for their support for the bipartisan infrastructure law and the other major bills. But we emphasize the need, you know, the continued need for infrastructure funding. And I think our message was really well received. Secondly, you should have all received an invitation to the update we're going to have with our large state delegation. I think we've got 36, 38 members in our delegation across the CROG region. So you all have been invited. I know many of you have signed up already. I know, Mayor, you'll be there. We've got the speaker. Speaker Ritter is going to kick things off. So this will be a virtual meeting at 1 p.m. this Friday, March 1st. And then the last thing I would touch on before I turn things over to Chris, we had a really good press conference last week. The governor's office reached out, asked us to hold a press conference on House Bill 5056, which would promote service sharing. I want to thank the town of Weathersfield, Mayor Lesser, and town manager Fred Presley for hosting us. And again, we had half a dozen speakers, CCM Cost, myself, another COG. It was a really good conversation on that bill. So very, very busy with legislative matters, as you can see here. And I'll turn things over to Chris.
Thanks so much, Matt. And thanks for having me. John Harkins has had a conflict that he couldn't move. So I'm joining today. In addition to what Matt said, I did want to just piggyback or add to, I should say, on the legislative forum on Friday. I think this probably goes without saying, but the delegation that you all have in the CROG region represents about 20% of the entire legislature, which is no small thing. You know, and within that delegation, you do have some strong chairman, obviously the speaker and the House Majority Leader and others. So amplifying with your legislative delegations, the CROG priorities has tremendous value, and certainly looking forward to that event on Friday. Quick snapshot of where we are in the session. There's about 10 weeks left before adjournment. It seems like it's a long way away or a very short way away, depending on how you look at it, but they're going to be packing a lot of things in there. We just wrapped up Monday with the appropriations budget hearings. They had a whole series of those on the spending side of the budget. They are now moving into appropriations work sessions with the subcommittees to split the budget up into divisions. They're working with agencies to ask them questions and compile the legislative response to the governor's budget proposal, which is just adjustments to the second year of the biennium that begins on July 1st. I'll get to the budget in a minute. Just wanted to cover where we are in some of the committee hearings or committee process and deadlines. We are right in the thick of public hearings. So far, no committees have JF bills, which means they're voting to pass bills out of committee, and they then become eligible for action on the floor of the House or the Senate. But I think as of tomorrow, some of the smaller committees with early committee deadlines will start voting on bills. I think tomorrow, like the Children's Committee, and I think next week, some of the smaller committees like Housing and Aging and others will start voting on bills. A lot of our committees are a little bit later in the process. Just to highlight some of the committees that we're watching and to identify deadlines. Housing is March 14th. Transportation is March 22nd. Planning and Development and Education are both on the 25th of March. Energy is the 26th. Environment's the 27th. And then the two budget committees, Finance and Appropriations, are April 4th and 5th, respectively. So what does that mean? That means that by each of those dates in those committees, all bills have to have been voted on favorably out of committee, or they do not advance. Of course, a lot of things can be resurrected by amendment later in the process, as you all probably know. But these committees act as funnels, and after those committee deadlines come and go, we'll have a much narrower set of bills that we're following into the House and Senate for action phase of the session. currently we're waiting for the legislature to compose their budget, and that is going to be the product of the work sessions that I mentioned earlier with the subcommittees of appropriations. They're going to be meeting over the next probably about 3 weeks or so before they have to report to the full appropriations committee. And the appropriations committee is expected to do their version of the budget adjustment document at some point before April 5th. Historically, that usually happens about a week or so before their deadline, but they do have up until the 5th to do it. Almost all committees, with very few exceptions, especially over the last several years, do not wait until their deadline to get bills out, but they could. So I do expect the legislature to have a budget probably early April, late March. Some of the key budget items that I'm sure you all have read about or even been involved with in conversations with legislators or others in the community, the fiscal guardrails is something we hear about a lot. That's, I think, the biggest issue facing where this budget will end up on a number of fronts. You have the governor, who is very committed to the fiscal constraints that were put in place and reauthorized in 2017 and last year, respectively. And that's creating a bit of consternation with some in the legislature, particularly on the Democratic side of the aisle, who want to figure out ways to be flexible with those fiscal constraints, the fiscal guardrails, as they're called. The negotiations after the committee does their budget will be really telling, because there's a number of ways that they can try to tackle getting around the fiscal guardrails, but it would require, in all likelihood, an agreement from the governor, which thus far he's been very staunchly opposed to circumventing or otherwise getting around the fiscal guardrails in any sort of way. That issue is compounded by the ARPA dollars, which, as you all know, must be spent or allocated by the end of the year. And the governor's budget proposal is only $1.1 million under the spending cap as it exists now. So there's colleges and universities, social services, healthcare, other segments of budget-interested constituencies that are looking to add hundreds of millions of dollars to the budget without the ability to do so under those constraints. So it's way too early to tell where that ends up, but there are folks within the legislature who want to do that. What is interesting is you have the Democratic governor and a unified Republican caucus in both the House and the Senate who don't want to blow through the guardrails. And you have a lot of Democrats who are in the legislative majority who want to, but there are also a lot of Democrats on the moderate Democrats who want to be a little bit more fiscally responsible and run on that when they go into re-election this year, because they're all up for re-election. In terms of the final budget, that really can't come into a clear focus until we get a revenue tax receipts estimates in early April. But between now and then, we'll be continuing to work on identifying what the next steps are. And I think that's really all I have in terms of a high-level overview. Matt, I don't know if you wanted to highlight anything in terms of committees that you engaged with. We have a number of meetings that have taken place with Doug and some select legislators and a couple that are being scheduled still. Matt, anything I missed or anything you want to add?
Just that we're submitting testimony on a very regular basis, you know, all related to items in our legislative agenda, whether it's appropriations on the supplemental motor vehicle grant, as an example, or things that are being considered by planning and development. So lots of activity there. And we'll have a chance to have a good informed conversation with our delegation later this week.
Yeah, and I should add, Matt, too, that there are still bills coming out and being introduced. As recently as last night, you probably maybe not even had a chance to review it yet, but our office sent out a few transportation bills that came out. I still haven't finished screening them all yet, but I know they are of interest, so we're working on that. We will still be seeing bills being introduced with language over the next few weeks. Even though deadlines are coming, some of the later committees don't even get really started until March. So there will be more bills that we're adding to our tracking, and I'm sure there's going to be more to talk about over the next few weeks.
Thank you, Chris. So we're happy to take any questions, Mayor.
Anybody? I don't see or hear anything. Matt, pulled the last part over to you for information resource items.
Thank you, Mayor. Just a couple handouts we have here. One, parking instructions for our new location. So take a look at that. And then we included, as we always do, copies of letters of support that we issue. There were two raised grant applications, one from the town of Farmington, one from UConn and Stores. And then I always share copies of our legislative testimony with you as well. And you'll see many more of these at your next meeting. Happy to take any questions here too, Mayor.
Looking for hands, seeing none. Thank you all, everybody, for your time today. I've got no other business. If anyone else has any,
don't from the staff. There.
Don't see anything. All right.
Motion to adjourn, Madam Mayor.
Motion made to adjourn, Mr. Coleman, seconded by me. Everybody's in favor. Bye. It's 1:03. Have a great day.
Thank you all so much. Appreciate it. Thank you.